Hey, everybody. It's Monday. We're talking about a haunting.
Yeah.
Hugo said, is this the one with the killing doll? No.
No.
It's not.
No. Child's Play. He's talking about the killing. He's talking about, yeah, it is. No, no.
Yeah, this is nothing
not
to
Chucky.
Do. Nothing not to Chucky. Do with Chucky. This no. is actually an episode of a haunting. Yeah. I'm not entirely sure why this one is called Child's Play,
though. They're running out of names.
I guess.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know why, because this is a fairly, I mean, it's not recent, but for a haunting, it's recent, because I think this came out in what, 2014 or 2015 or something like that?
I thought it was 2016, wasn't it? 2014, yeah. This is season 7.
Yeah,
I think 2014, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the story takes place in 2013 or 2014, so I'm assuming it's just a year or two after that. So, you know, so there's really no excuse. They knew about the movie. So I don't know why they would call it that. And like I said, it doesn't really have that much to do. Yes, there is a child involved, but
yeah,
the demon really kind of like fucks with everybody. So
this is actually kind of like a part two to the one we did last week, because this involves this the guy who does the investigation in this and who's telling this story is the guy who was one of the ghost victims of the last.
Ghost sure. victims.
He was
I
a
like
ghost
that.
Victim. Yeah.
That's yeah. Well, that's kind of. There's two reasons why I wanted to do this one. Even though I'm gonna say up front, it's not a great episode.
No.
It's a little bit repetitive. Not a lot happens. But I am gonna say okay. So last week we did Nightmare in the Attic, right? Which was also season 7. And on that one, that was like the Fox family. So you had Wesley Fox, who was a kid when that shit happened. And then they said. Then I found out while I was researching that episode that guy grew up and became a paranormal investigator, and that he was one of the people that investigated this case, which they also covered on this. Now, he also wrote a book about this case, which is the Cupid family. Not Cupid, but Cupid with a T.
Yeah.
And it was available on Kindle Unlimited for free. So, actually, I didn't quite finish it because it was like, I was thinking that it was going to be one of those paranormal books, like about a case where it's like 50 pages long and like really badly written. However, this one was actual book length. It was 222 pages and it was actually like pretty well written for this kind of thing. Like I was like, wow, it's actual grammatically correct and everything. Like you could tell that there was like a lot of filler in it. Like I'm not going to say that, but
it was padded out a little bit.
A little bit, just in the sense that...
And Jen's an author, so she knows.
Well, just in the sense that there was like some scenes where it's like people were calling up and being like, you know, hello, hey, how are you doing? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like conversations and shit that didn't really need to be in there. Mm. But it's like, it wasn't really that bad. So I actually read most of it. Like, I didn't, like, read it, but I skimmed through it because I was, like, looking for... And the thing about it is that, according to this book, like, way more cool shit happened in the case. Like, I don't know if it really happened or not, but it's just, like...
According to the story.
According to the story, like, way more cool shit happened that they didn't put in the episode. Yeah. And it's like, it really would have... made the episode a lot more exciting if they had put some of the shit that was in the book in there, but for some reason they did not.
So you could say that, okay, did the book predate the episode?
I don't think so, because the cover of it says as featured on A Haunting or something like that, unless they did a new cover later on.
Right.
I'm not really sure, but I mean, I think the book came out around the same time
around
as the episode.
Okay.
So,
All right. Hopefully it wasn't a situation where the episode came out, they weren't too impressed with the episode, they said, we can beat that, and then write the book, we're going to make it a little more exciting this time. But I'm not going to say that that's what happened, but...
Yeah, I don't know. It's
I don't
like,
know what predates
like, from the timing of it, it seemed like they came out at around the same time, so I guess, you know
so what
I mean?
You could say, based on what you're telling me, this episode might be a teaser for the book.
Yeah, because like I said, the book,
more in the book
is a lot more, like, there's a lot more, like, poltergeist-type activity and shit like that, which I don't think they showed any of that.
No, not in the,
in the episode. The episode, like I said, seemed like a lot of...
Feelings.
Yeah.
I was being watched. It's
bothering feelings
me.
And a lot of, like, filler.
Yeah.
But I think that kind of happened a lot with the later episodes, because one thing that I noticed that they started doing in about, like, season 6 or 7 was that... you know, they would do, like, a segment, and then it would go to commercial, and then it would came back from commercial. They would, like, essentially repeat most of the shit they just said.
Yeah.
So when you're watching it without commercials, you're just kind of like, okay, well, you can skip over the first 30 seconds or minute or something after it comes back in the commercial, because they're just reiterating everything that just happened.
Now, when you're talking about a case that hinges on feelings, I'm not going to say that that's fake, because for those of you who are new to the show, me growing up as a kid, my family had a whole poltergeist thing happened, and Jenny wrote a book about it later on when we told her the story. It's called Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. Had pictures of it, took pictures of shit that had been moved and stacked up and turned upside down, you know, with a little Polaroid camera at the time and everything. So it was something that happened, and we tried to prove, get evidence as much as we could back in the 80s, early 80s, you know, but it's just a story now. And I've seen that. I know that's real. Later on, many, many years later, after getting out of the Army and having some other shit happen, like a near-death experience and everything, moved into a house that was a bad house. Me and my Army buddy moved into it together. And every girl we brought over and everybody we had fucking visit us, they were scared of that house. You'd have to walk them to the bathroom, and they'd use the bathroom, and then you'd walk them back to the hall, and no one could put their finger on it. But it was just feelings and bad dreams and stuff. That was real, but I could never prove it. It was just based on feelings. Nothing ever moved. Too subjective, you know?
Yeah.
So I can understand a case that is basically just feelings, because some of them are just like that. They're not strong enough to move anything.
But they're not that cinematic.
No,
I mean, you
can't
know,
make a movie about them.
Right, because it's just kind of like, you just can't make a movie of people just going, ooh.
Right. And it's
like
hard,
for 2 hours.
And it's hard to make a convincing case in a paranormal investigation for anything, because it's just feelings. There's nothing to measure, nothing to record, no physical evidence. So I can understand the conundrum, you know.
Yeah.
You know there's something wrong with this place, but you just can't prove it. It's just feelings when you get in there. So I'm not going to knock it. If the way the case really was, as if it was shown as it was in the episode, doesn't mean it wasn't real. I wasn't there. I didn't experience it. Maybe. I mean,
it was way crazier in the book.
Yeah, it's crazier in the book. Like, they should have put that in the episode.
That's what I'm saying. Because I'm sitting there reading the book. Like I said, I don't necessarily believe any of it really happened, but I was like, why did they put all this shit in the episode? That would have made it like a lot more exciting. You know what I'm saying? Tom Sykes says family of Bible smackers in this one. Yeah.
Yeah, it happens.
I mean, they seemed like nice people. I'm not
sure. Doesn't discredit the case. Usually... Yeah, the people involved in any kind of paranormal case have some kind of a spiritual belief system, even if it's some kind of a moral belief system. And they're going to put that into this case, that they're going to see it through that lens. So just because it's Christians seeing it doesn't mean it wasn't happening. Just because it was Muslims seeing it, it doesn't mean it didn't happen. Just because atheists saw it doesn't mean that it didn't happen. You're going to color it with whatever lens that you use as your basic perspective, you know what I mean? So everybody's going to tell the story according to their basic belief systems, you know? Must be a demon, you know? Must be a ghost. Must be a djinn. It must be psychic forces, you know? They're going to have us come up with an explanation that they can live with. This is the way it is.
I think what we might do on this show, we'll just kind of go over the... Because you just rewatched this, right?
Yeah, I saw it twice.
Yes, because we watched it last night, and then I watched it again earlier and took notes while I was watching it, and then he watched it again probably like an hour ago.
Yeah, and it's still kind of flimsy in the episode. You know what I mean?
But like I said, we'll talk about the episode, and then at the end, I'll go into like all the shit that I found in the book that was a lot more interesting that they probably should have put into the episode. Like I said, it didn't quite finish the book. I was just kind of like hurrying to like finish the shit, so I was just kind of like skimming, and I was like, well, it just kind of looks like more of the same, and it kind of looked like it was getting more similar.
Yeah, and it ends the same way Exorcism comes, and you know, oh, the smell and of
everything,
sanctity.
Right, and everything.
You know what I'm getting back
and
to.
And everything's fine.
Yeah.
The smell of sanctity.
The smell of sanctity.
Man, that's another like audio clip that I should have.
Yeah, we should write that down.
Of like Lorraine going,
Lorraine
like,
Warren go, the smell of sanctity. It wouldn't surprise
was
me.
Was it but, actually even her, or was it the actress playing her?
I think it was the actress playing.
Yeah, because I think it was like reenactment.
I think, yeah.
The but, smell of sanctity.
And she was goofing on it too, I think. The smell of sanctity.
I mean, it's really, really hard to say that with a straight face.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if fucking Lorraine had a little hidden bottle of spray bottle of fucking rose fucking car.
Well, that's what I'd be doing.
Put some car. Roses. The smell
you
of sanctity.
You guys smell that?
Bitch, you got that at 7-Eleven. Put that car air freshener back there.
She's waving it
back
around.
In those days, they used to sell air fresheners in a metal little metal can. And it was like a Banaca. Remember the Banaca?
Yeah.
I remember those. We used to buy them.
Yeah.
Fucking spray them in the car after you were smoking weed in the car. It didn't hide the weed smell.
No, of course
it
not.
It just blended in there. It's weed and roses. Yeah. Okay.
It's like, strawberry weed.
But she probably went down to 7-Eleven on her way there. Oh, let's get the roses.
Yeah.
Get that shit. When you're not looking. And then she stirred around. Hey, you smell that? Smell of sanctity.
I mean, that seems like a really easy thing to do.
Yeah, they did that kind of shit, man.
Of course. Why wouldn't you? Like I said, that's totally what I would do.
Yeah.
If I didn't have a conscience and I wanted to, like, fuck people.
Well, a lot of people in that business, you know, it was parlor tricks going back to, like, seances and stuff.
Yeah, of course. Tom Sykes said, and I'm actually glad you brought this up because this was exactly what I was thinking. He said, this episode seemed made up, kind of, like the little girl was reading shit written for her to say and not her own words. I thought that too. And I think, like, I even actually wrote that down on my notes. I said, some of the stuff she says doesn't sound like something a 10-year-old kid would say.
Yes, like an adult would say.
So I kind of feel, and the way she was saying it, and the little girl in this, like,
she's cute as hell.
She's not a little girl anymore. No, obviously, she's 20 now. She's 20 now, I guess, because she was 10 when this episode was 2014. Yeah. But yeah, she's adorable.
Yeah.
But some of the stuff she said, it really did sound like someone was. I wrote down, it sounded like someone was coaching her.
Yeah.
Like somebody had written down. Like, like she was reading off a teleprompter.
Well, we don't know. We weren't there, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just saying that is what it seemed like.
Have you ever done any kind of fucking corporate-based production? Me and Jenny fucking went to the studio and did shit for fucking NPR and stuff. It's, to execute the job, you already know pretty much what you're going to say. They tell you, okay, here, this is when you're going to tell us about when this happened. Over here, this is when you're going to tell us that. We're going to spool it in. They're making something. So it's going to sound canned, especially, you know, it just does.
I mean, the adults
person that's not really used to it.
Usually.
A person who's not really used to that, it sounds kind of canned. So I think it might have been a little bit of, like, stage fright in a certain way. Not really stage fright. I think she just might have been a little bit uncomfortable in front of cameras.
Maybe, but I'm going to say, when I get toward the end, because there was one particular thing that she said that I was like, that really doesn't sound like something a 10-year-old kid would say.
They're
like,
Southern. They're from Arkansas.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're Southern Arkansas family, and her name was Brittany, and spelled with I's, all I's.
Brittni.
I mean, I saw that shit, started laughing, you know, and I go, she's a stripper now.
With a name like that, I was like, poor
that's a stripper. That's a stripper poor name. In the South, that's a stripper name.
I think in my notes I even wrote, God, that spelling, like that.
Yeah, she was cute though.
Yeah, she was cute as shit. Yeah. The little kid on here was like adorable. But like, I'm not blaming her. It's not her fault. But like I said, I hope she's not a stripper. Well, unless she wanted to be a stripper, you know what I mean? But like I said,
stripper at the biker bar.
That is definitely a stripper. Yeah. Like, spelled like that.
Yeah.
But yeah. Sorry, kid. I know you're not a kid anymore, but yeah, we just thought that was funny. We're just clowning. Yeah. All right, so let's talk about this episode. Yeah. So this takes place, the events took place in 2013, so, you know, fairly recent. This is only a decade ago. In a very small town called Greenbrier, Arkansas, which is just outside of Little Rock. I've never been to Arkansas in my entire life, so I really don't know that much about Greenbrier at all. So we're following a married couple whose names are Chris and Roseanne Cupid, and their two kids, who at the time, I guess, were Justin was their son, and he was 13, and Brittany, with an I, was 10 years old. Roseanne said this is kind of like a small town, everybody knows everybody kind of thing. It's like, you know, could they call it a bedroom community, you know. Now, much is made in the episode of these unusual, the red rooster comb flowers, which are pretty weird looking, and they're actually, like, really pretty. I like them. But Chris's grandmother used to grow them, and I think in the episode, they kind of made it seem like the family had just moved to this house, or is that me? I mean, you watched it, like, just an hour ago, so did it seem to you like they said, oh, we just moved there? Because that's not how it happened, like, in the book. They had actually been there a long time.
Yeah, I think it kind of did lead you to believe they had just moved there.
See, that's what I thought. Like, I don't think they came right out and said that, right. But... Because one of the things...
The way it was shot, it kind of... From... I don't really remember.
Yeah.
This particular episode, a lot of it, the way it's formatted, is kind of generic at this point. We're talking about season 7.
Yeah.
Season 7 became very samey, you know.
Yeah.
Not just season 7, but, you know, it started to get samey around 5, 6.
I mean, there's only so much you can do in that framework, you know what I mean? Because if you go too crazy, you get,
the same.
I've been possessed by a mummy, and now there's green, scaly people haunting me. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And it's like, but, you know, I kind of feel like you're either going to do that and just go completely batshit insane, or they're all going to be kind of like the same.
It's because... They're formatted in a way you can only tell stories like this only so many ways. So it's going in a format, and the stories are all kind of similar. The titles are kind of similar. We have a hard time remembering what the titles there are and fucking what is called what. You know, what episode is called what? It's easy to, you know, Beyond the Door, Death Among Us, Darkness Has Passed. Yeah. Into the darkness.
Darkness up here. Darkness over there. Darkness behind you.
Darkness behind.
Darkness above.
Darkness underneath.
Like I said, I think they have like that little... I think they just have all the words and they throw them in a hat.
Fuck them up, man. Ghost in the tree. What? Yeah. Because there were several of them where the ghost sounded like
they
it was...
They could have called one...
They called that shit Ghost in the Tree.
Ghost in the Tree.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Ghost in the Tree.
Darkness Within. I think they actually did have one called Darkness Within, didn't they? Darkness Inside, Darkness Within, something like that.
Darkness Inside Her.
That's the porn version.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's interracial.
Yeah. Well, yeah, sure.
Yeah, of course.
Anyway, these are so fun.
Yeah.
But so we always end up talking about porn or food. I don't know why that is. No, I know why that is. I'm pretending.
We got to be serious here, man. We're doing a serious investigation of this fucking case.
Okay.
But
yeah, so what I was saying, why I got off on that tangent, was because of like the red flowers, they kind of made it seem like it's like, oh, we saw these flowers growing up front, and it was almost like a sign like that was the house we were supposed to have, because Chris's grandmother used to grow them, and so he always associated those flowers with his grandmother. But like I said, they kind of made it seem like they just moved to this house, but that's not the case because I read the book, so I'll get into that like a little bit later. Now, Chris says that he still feels his grandmother's presence, like, watching over him. She died in 2003. Now, on the show, like, in the reenactment, it actually showed him seeing her, although he never said that on the show. I'll get into, like, that, because they did go more into that in the book, but like I said, on the show, he didn't say that he ever seen her. He just says that... It seemed like he just referred to, like, a warm, happy presence around them. Like, and he could feel that she was there. You know what I mean? And then Brittany, the little girl, she said she always said that her dad always said, oh, grandma's here, like, watching over you. And she's like, oh, that's nice, you know. It's keeping us from getting hurt or whatever. So, So this family is, real religious. Now, Chris apparently went to church a lot when his grandmother was alive, but had stopped going. I don't think he stopped going completely or anything, but like he didn't go as much like after she died. But recently, the family has started to get like a lot more back into that. I guess because like the kids were getting a little bit older and they just kind of wanted the kids, they were trying to like instill their values or whatever. And they thought like the kids were old enough to understand now or appreciate it or blah, blah, blah. So they started doing what they call daily devotionals and spending a lot more time at church, shit like that. Like, they're doing the whole praying in a circle in the living room thing, like reading Bible stories every night, the whole deal. Like I said, we were both very amused, because these are from, they're from Arkansas. So we were both very amused by Roseanne's pronunciation of Bible.
Yeah. Bible. Doing the Bible.
The Bible stories.
Yeah, 365 Bible stories. Bible stories.
Bible stories.
Bible. Yeah.
So they got one a day.
Yeah, Bible.
And then they're like sitting around reading them. Which, I don't know, it just doesn't really sound like a good time to me. But
Mississippi, they draw it out of me. Bible.
Babel.
Yeah.
Tom Sykes says, how did the house even become infested with demonic activity again? Oh, we'll get into that. Yeah. We'll get into that. All right.
We're just fucking with them. If y'all are watching us make fun of your case or shit, we're Southern too, so we're just fucking with you. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Yeah, taking a piss.
I'm from Florida.
Yeah. And she's a stripper too, so it's okay.
Named Brittany with an I. Not really.
Jenny with an I.
I actually used to spell it like that when I was a kid. Yeah. Well, just because I went to school with so many other girls named Jenny that I was like, well, maybe I should spell it a different way so I can differentiate. But I went back to the Y.
I, and instead of a dot on top of the I, you had a little star, didn't you?
No.
Okay. That's what you should have done. Should have put a little star.
I wasn't that bad.
Okay.
But yeah, so they're reading all these Bible stories, the Bible stories.
Babel.
So while their faith is getting stronger in that way, like something starts fucking with them, like one family member at a time. And again, this is why this episode seemed like a little bit repetitive, because it's like, hey, we're standing around praying, and then suddenly somebody's like, "What is? I feel an evil presence," and it like happens to each one of them, like pretty much, except for Chris. So it starts with Roseanne, the mom. Like, while they're doing their prayer circle deal, she's saying the prayer, and then she senses evil. I'm like, yeah, I've done that before. I, like, sensed evil.
Yeah.
She that's what I said. Yeah, every time somebody says that, every time somebody says that in the episode, I always look at him and go, I've sensed some evil in here before.
Yeah.
Like, had to spray you with Febreze.
Abdominal snowman. Florida skunk ape.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, that shit doesn't happen anymore, though.
It doesn't happen.
I changed my ways.
Yeah.
Look, man, we got to get back on the fucking channel.
All right.
Got to get back on the channel.
So, she actually described it, the real lady, she actually described it as an uneasy feeling and unnerving. That's what she said it felt like. Like, she didn't see anything. She was just kind of like, ooh, I sense evil. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, it's then revealed that she had felt the same sense of dread as a child when her and her friends were playing with, guess what, one of those evil Ouija boards at a sleepover.
Another trope.
Yeah, I mean,
Parker Brothers brought so many demons into this world.
That's what I know, and I wrote that in my notes, too. It's like, blame the poor Parker Brothers.
Yeah.
And blame the woman. They always do.
Wonder if you could sue them.
I know. Well, Parker Brothers were probably like, yeah, fuck it. Just like, they probably think it's like, well, it just sells more Ouija boards.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, we'll give you $6,000. Here, here. Put that up in the newspaper that we're bringing in demons.
Yep, we totally do.
Our shit works.
I mean, yeah, well, that's what, I mean, if I worked for Parker Brothers, I would just lean into that shit, because that's going to make people want it more.
Yeah.
Calling demons, man, I'm all into it. Zach says, no, it has to be spelled J-Y-N-E-E. Yeah. That looks more like Jiny, but okay.
Yeah. That's like the porn version.
Tom Sykes says, supposedly the family were on the level of religious like Mommy and Daddy from the film The People Under the Stairs.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, you did. We reviewed it.
People Under the Stairs.
Yeah, it's Wes Craven.
Man, it's been a long time since I've seen it. I don't remember it.
Yeah, we did. We reviewed it a couple years back. But, I don't know if they were quite that bad, but, yeah, it was on that spectrum for sure.
I think I kind of remember.
Spectrum for sure. So there's actually, like, a flashback of that whole situation of her, like, fucking with the evil Ouija board, and, like, she was the one that brought this whole thing down on everybody, because, you know, always gotta blame the woman and blame the Ouija boards. So, later that night, Roseanne is overcome with a sensation again. While she's standing in the kitchen, she said she felt like extremely cold. She said the cold went from one side of her body all the way around to the back. Now, of course, at first she thought it might be the AC, but she goes up to the vent and it's like it's not on. So then she said she felt the hair on the back of her neck stand up and felt like someone was in the room with her. She called it a spine tingly feeling. That was the quote she used. She looks out the window, she locks the door, but she doesn't see anybody. And then she goes into the living room and turns out all the lights, holding a candle, like, to make things more atmospheric, I guess. And then there's a, pow, like, there's a demon jump scare. Like, she turns around and it's like, pow, like, there's a big fucking, it's just looking like a demon, man, with the horns and the teeth and everything. And she screams her fucking head off. Now, I guess she actually did see something because she did note that it was just a what she called a quick glimpse that disturbed her, but she didn't really describe what she saw exactly. Now, when I get into the stuff that was in the book, like, I'll talk a little bit more about that, but she didn't really say, oh my God, I saw a fucking demon, you know what I mean? So he comes down, he's like, you know, what the fuck are you screaming at? Like, he didn't say it like that, he was much nicer, but, like, what are you screaming at? And she's just like, oh, nothing, I just, you know, she just didn't want to tell him. Also, I will note that they had a painting of Jesus on their wall in the living room.
He's right next to Elvis.
And it looked like hippie Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah.
Like the face, because I was like, wow, that looks just like Edgar Allan Poe, except
with hippie.
That was in the
movie. That was in the episode.
Yeah, in the episode. Yeah. But it says, I just thought I would write that down because it made me laugh. That was like, his face looks just like Edgar Allan Poe. I never saw one that looked like that before.
When I was a kid, it would have been basically Jesus on velvet right next to us, Elvis on velvet. And they would have looked a lot alike. The only difference, Jesus was just Elvis with a beard.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Anthony asked
in a robe.
Asked if we had seen Megan yet. No, we haven't, but it's like, I really do want to see it. Like, it looks really good.
Which one was that?
It's in the theaters at the moment. It's kind of the one it's all the buzz right now. Do you remember that movie, The Changeling? Oh, yeah. That's one of my favorite movies from the 70s, actually. Like, one of my favorite haunted house movies of all time. I think we reviewed it a couple of years back. Maybe longer than that. I think it was a while back we did that one. So the daughter, Brittany, has also been having some paranormal experiences. But initially, they're of a much more benign nature. So Chris, the dad, walks by her room one day and hears her, like, singing or humming this particular song, like, while she's playing with her dolls. And he remembers it as a song that his grandmother used to sing to him when he was little. Now, he's sure that he's never told Brittany about this song, and Grandma actually died before Brittany was born. So Chris, like, comes in and says, where'd you hear that? And Brittany said that she heard a voice telling her, Susie Q. So she told her dad, oh, Susie Q. And then this freaked Chris out, too, because he said his grandma would always refer to somebody as Susie Q if she couldn't remember their name. Like, so he was, like, weirded out by that. And he's like, and I'm pretty sure, like, we never said that to the kid. Now, the show, like, the reenactment has the ghost of Grandma, like, reaching out to touch Brittany's hair, which seems a little creepy. I mean, the way they have it. But again, the real kid never said that she saw an apparition of the grandma. So, you know, so there's that. And I don't think I ever saw it. I didn't see it in the book either. Like I said, I just skimmed through, but... So then they're doing another devotional prayer circle thing like they do every day. And this time it's Brittany that feels like the weird evil presence in the room, which kind of like makes her stop talking and like look around like, what the fuck was that? You know what I mean? She said it felt like something was watching her. And she says, I thought it was my imagination, so I just kept it to myself. And like I said, this little girl's adorable, and she was just, like, very, very serious. And look, I even wrote in my notes, honestly, some of the stuff she said sounded as though she'd maybe been coached. And then I said, not sure, but maybe she talked just
like that.
She
probably was coached to deliver the lines in front of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
But it might have been things that she said before in the past.
Maybe.
Because you're like a robot up there in front of that camera.
That's true. She just, yeah. I mean, maybe she was just wigged out, but I don't know. But like I said, some of the stuff she said didn't really sound like something a 10-year-old kid would say.
Although that's kind of what it was like when I went to Mammoth Mountain. I could feel that thing fucking watching me. I thought it was my imagination. I blew it off. But so was everybody else.
Yeah, everybody kind of says that on this show. Because I guess that's like the natural reaction. Because you're just like, well, that was some weird shit. But maybe I just like, maybe I haven't had enough sleep.
I saw something moving. I saw something move within minutes and then denied that I saw that. I was like, no, that didn't happen.
Well, yeah. I think that's a very natural human.
It must have fell over. You know, but no, I'm fucking through the socks.
Like, I didn't see it right.
Yeah, I didn't see it right.
Yeah, because, you know.
Yeah, you can't accept it.
Right. So, at this point, the narrator says, something has been awakened in the house. He says it like that. So, while Brittany is sleeping, she gets woke up at 3 in the morning by, I guess, like, the feeling of something in her room, at least according to the reenactment, and maybe the sound of breathing, or something like that. So, she sits up and sees the demon, like, in the room, like, growling and reaching for with his claws, though for some reason he doesn't ever seem to get any closer to her, like, so I was kind of laughing because he was, I guess because the actor, like, couldn't move because he was green screened or whatever, and they just superimposed him over the shot. But so he was just sitting there going, ah, and she's like, you know, screaming and running around, but he's not like chasing her or nothing like that. So he's just kind of like grasping at the air, which I thought was kind of funny. So she runs to the door of her room, but for some reason she can't get it open. So she kind of ends up cowering in the corner and like praying for God to protect her. And then at this point, the little girl, the real little girl, says, "It was like hell." And that, again, that struck me as a very strange thing for a 10-year-old kid to say. But maybe not like a real religious one. I don't know. Just like the inflection that she used was just very strange. But like I said, I don't know this kid, so you know. So she runs in her parents' room and tells them about it, but they thought it was just a nightmare. And I will say that even after, like, I went through the book and everything, I'm not super clear on what shit the kid actually saw when she was awake and what shit was a nightmare. It's kind of ambiguous. And I'm kind of thinking that this particular event was maybe a nightmare, because the way she talked about it sounded like she was talking about a nightmare, but then like maybe she's like, oh, but it was real. So I don't know. I don't know if she just dreamed it or what the fuck the deal was. Because when I was reading the book, there was some stuff in there and I was like, holy shit, that's crazy. But then they'd be like, oh, it was a dream. You know what I mean? Right. So I don't know. So like I said, it's very, very ambiguous. So she sleeps with mom and dad that night. Now, the entity keeps coming back. She's like, it just kept coming back like more and more often. Like it'd be once a week and then a couple times a week and then it was every night. Justin, the older brother, he starts getting worried about her. It's like she doesn't tell him exactly what's going on at first. She just says, oh, I have really bad nightmares and I don't want to talk about it. And the real kid said, you know, I kept praying to make the nightmares stop, but they wouldn't. And Chris was like, well, you know, we knew something was the matter with her because she was like all sad all the time and like quiet and she wasn't like she was, but they didn't really know how to help her because she wouldn't say anything. So then the what?
Sounded an awful lot like a bad house.
Yeah.
May have been something similar to what me and Eric saw up in Boston. It was just a bad house. Just an unnatural stillness, of feelings of being watched, feelings of having something just looking at you at the side of your head real close. Have real bad dreams in there because you're under, like, under, it feels like some pressure or like oppression, you know. But you don't ever see anything move. Do you know what I mean? Maybe it was a situation like that and they embellished it slightly to make a better book or a better episode. It's like, because you're saying that, yeah, I saw this demon and this did that, but it was just a dream.
Yeah.
So you have to include the dreams in the action. The dreams become the action for the action scenes for the episode.
Yeah.
So maybe what they're doing.
I kind of feel like, yeah.
May have been nothing more than just what I would call a bad house. Which is a place that is strong with the dark side.
Because, man, I mean, yeah. I could write all kind of shit about nightmares I've had over the years, yeah. But it's like, you know what I mean? It's just...
Yeah, but when you find a place like this, it is paranormal. But it's not physical. You know what I mean? It doesn't move anything. It's not strong enough. But it's strong enough to fuck with you. You know, give you bad dreams. I don't know if the dreams are an artifact that is fucking... psychically blasted into your skull and it's messages from the, or if you're inventing it because you're under so much stress. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I kept having dreams about fucking starving puppies in the pipes and in the water pipes and shit, you know? Weird shit. And dreaming that I fucking rolled over and looked down on the side of the bed and could see through all the floors of the house and it went down into fucking just an abyss of fucking dungeons and shit deep underneath there. Just weird shit, you know? I don't know if some kind of ghost is making you see that or if you're just having bad dreams because you're under some kind of weird spiritual oppression. I don't know. You just got to roll with it, you know. But nothing ever happened. We eventually just moved out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this demon then starts fucking with Justin and his crazy emo hair. He was 13.
Yeah, that shit looked like it was blowing in the wind. He just brushed his shit in a circle. Like
that's kind of what it looked
just
like.
Gonna let that shit grow and just cut a little bit so it doesn't cover his face. I remember those fucking haircuts.
I do too. I remember those. That's why I kind of laughed. This is like 2014, but yeah,
dated as fuck.
Yeah,
haven't seen those in a long time.
I haven't either. Yeah, yeah. That hair did have a moment, but yeah.
That went out with Jankos.
Yeah, so it was a while back.
Yeah. Well, actually, Jankos went out a long time before that.
Yeah, I think they did, because I still remember seeing people with hair. Well, because, like yeah. I said, this this episode was 2014. And I mean, I know the kid's from Arkansas, so we might have been like a little bit behind the times or something, but it's like, yeah, I haven't seen hair like that in a while. But yeah, it did definitely look like he just brushed his hair in like a circle. Because it looked like helmety, like to an extent. So he says that while they're doing the prayer thing, again, now it starts picking on him because he's like the third one. So he said the air started feeling like really thick and muggy, and he felt like something was there, but he couldn't like put his finger on it, like he felt a presence. So that night, Justin is in the shower when the bathroom door creaks open by itself. So he gets out and looks around like, what the fuck was that? But there's nobody in the hallway. And then he goes back into the bathroom. He's brushing his teeth and stuff. And then the medicine cabinet door, like, swings open by itself. And then, like, he goes to close it and, rah, like, another demon jump scare. Because, like, the demons in the mirror are like, hi! You know what I mean? It's like that.
And it was all a dream.
Well, no, I don't think he said that was.
Yeah,
no,
okay, right.
I don't think he said that was.
All right.
Because he said that he saw a hand come straight for him, and then he runs into his mom's room to tell his mom about it, and he apparently has the telltale three claw marks on the back of his shoulder.
That's right.
Yeah, so that apparently really happened.
So that supposedly was something that happened.
That really happened. I was just talking about the little girl, the way that she talked about her dreams in the book and kind of in this. Like, I wasn't real clear on if the shit was really happening or not. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But he said he saw the demon in the mirror and it scratched him, so.
Yeah.
Just saying.
So he saw an apparition and it scratched him.
Yeah, and it did like the three-clawed demonic thing.
Things like that have been reported before. And the three things, man, that's fucking... There were three claw marks on the damn chain that locked the door at Math Mountain, and fucking I heard it fucking break that damn chain lock off the inside of the door. My Uncle Red came out. I was sleeping on the fucking couch, looking terrified. He comes out of the fucking master bedroom. He says, well, did you hear that? And he goes, yeah, I heard it. And he goes, what was that? And I said, it sounded like a chain. And he went down and he came back up. He says, I didn't see anything. He didn't turn on any lights or anything. Next morning, fucking found that damn chain hanging by a single screw and had three deep scratch marks. It looked like it was done with the damn, you know, those garden rake, the little three claws. It looked like it was done with something like that. But, man, it was weird. That scared me when I saw that. I was like, this thing can hurt you.
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
Yeah, that was the second night we were there. Yeah, weird. It never did hurt you, though, but it could. It was strong enough. I showed that to Red, and he's like, fuck. Yeah.
What's up, Mango? Mango just arrived. All right. So, at this point, like, Chris and Roseanne kind of think... You'd think that as Christian as they are, that they would, like, immediately jump to demon, but they don't seem to. They definitely think it's paranormal and, like, shit's haunted, right? So they decide, well, we're going to go to the church for help. So they go to the pastor, but the pastor doesn't do jack. Basically, they're just like, well, I don't really know what to tell you except just pray. And I was like, yeah, they're already doing that, motherfucker, and it's not really helping. Now, according to the voiceover... Anthony Call, the narrator, their faith only appears to make the entity angrier. Like, that's what it usually does. So at this point, the Cupid family calls Branson Paranormal in October of 2013. And like I said, this is Wesley Fox, the guy from last week's episode, Nightmare in the Attic, and his wife, Melissa, who they do the paranormal stuff. They didn't mention this on the episode. I might get into it with the book later, but they also brought their teenage son at the time, like named Brandon or something like that. So Wesley
Brandy,
actually
Brandon.
I know.
Yeah.
Wesley actually wrote a book about this case, as I mentioned. It's called Deliver Us from Evil, which I'll get into a little bit later because I did like kind of skim through there and write some notes about it down. So they set up the EVP and all that. Wesley asked the entity what it wants, and he claims that when he went and listened to the EVPs back later, he heard like three voices in Latin. And he had it translated. I think it was actually his son that translated it because they didn't say that on the show, but he saw it in the book, said it in the book, because his son was like taking it in school or something. And apparently, what the voice said was it wanted children's souls. So, you know, of course, you know, they didn't play the real EVP on the show because they never do. So I'm sure it really wasn't. And I think even in the book, he said, oh, well, you could barely make it out. And I was like, yeah, I'll bet. So his wife, Melissa, who calls herself a psychic empath, goes in the house and is drawn to Brittany's room. Now, she says that she senses two distinct entities. One of them is Grandma, obviously, and the other one she just calls a dark force that she's not real sure about. And then she said that she started feeling like really, really bad hatred and negative energy. And then she walks out into the hallway to find that it has suddenly been transformed into a JC's haunted house. Covered with, I know that's uncharitable. Covered with fake spider webs, yeah, and fake spiders.
Larry's in there saying that he just put on some Black Sabbath and try to vibe with the ghost. That reminds me of an old interview I saw back in the maybe mid to late 90s of Violent J. He's the lead singer of Insane Clown Posse. And he's got his clown makeup on it and everything. And in this interview, they ask him how he came up with all this. And he said when he was a kid, the house that he grew up in was haunted. And he described perfectly poltergeist phenomena to the exact same thing that I saw. Things moving, things responding. And the age was right and everything. I'd like to be able to dig that up again. But it was a 90s interview of Violent J talking about, he called it a ghost. He didn't call it a poltergeist, but he called it a ghost. And he briefly, you know, in about a couple paragraphs, told the whole story. And I was like, man, it was the same pattern and everything that, you know. And he at the end, he said, I just decided to just vibe with, he said, to just chill with the ghost and be down with it. And then it went away.
Because it wasn't fun anymore. No, ghost was trying to scare him, and he was just.
It wasn't a ghost. It was a poltergeist.
No, I know. I'm just making a joke.
It's clouding the issue, Jenny. What he did was he resolved the inner conflict with himself, and it the RSPK went away. But I believed him, and even though it sounded like he was goofing around at first, but then when he told that story, I could hear it in his voice that was real, that it scared him. And based on that, he was always kind of attracted to, like, the dark side of things and a hidden knowledge of what's really happening, you know, like, what actually is happening, questioning things, and that's where he kind of came up with them. He liked rap music, and he kind of came up with this idea of dark clowns doing fucking rap music and comedy and shit and fucking... And I recommend his interview, at least the one that I heard. It was an early one.
Zach says, I thought you were going to say it was transformed into a JCPenney's. Now that would have been really funny. But no, she just walks out and I was just kind of like, oh, look at all the fake, you know, this is fake spider webs. And it's like little fake spiders like stuck on them and stuff like that. Now, she said that spiders were her greatest fear, so I'm presuming that's why the demon was making her see them. So she said that, like, she couldn't breathe and she had to run out the house. The show also kind of showed her, like, seeing the demon in the hallways, but she didn't say she'd seen that. I'll get a little bit more into that later because she said some shit about that in the book. So Wesley and Melissa, at this point, tell the family pretty much what they already know. You got two ghosts, one's grandma, and one is... a demon. Like, they even did, like, the dramatic pause, yeah. And I think, like, while we were watching it, like, they show, like, each family member, and I was like, because yeah. It definitely, I was like, they didn't figure out it was a demon by now? I'm like, why is that a surprise to anybody? I don't know, but it's just, like, the way that they framed it was, like, very funny to me, because it's, like, I don't know, it's just, like, overly dramatic.
I always like this demon angle, all right? These are Christians, all right? And the United States, basically culturally Christian. When you think of demons, you're thinking of things from hell, you know? But even in the Bible, there's always, like, this two different versions of demons being talked about. Punished angels being enchained into the earth with, I guess, Satan in charge of them, which that's not quite what it says. It says Satan's in heaven and appears in heaven a lot to test Job and stuff. So what you're saying is that angels, ultra-powerful angels that stand 600 feet high and who could wipe out entire cities or fucking with people?
Angelzilla.
Yeah. They say they're about 600 feet. It's about the size of Godzilla. I think it was 600 feet is basically what it could
be. Oh, my God. Has anybody made that horror movie? I would watch that.
They're huge. When one later on, you know, in the New Testament, I think in one of the Gospels, it says, you know, Jesus' spirit appears, you know, after he's out, and the cross, and a big cross is seen, and I think that was a couple hundred feet as it was described, but it's just literature. Anyway, then the other demon that you're supposed to believe in is demons that can possess pigs, and Jesus can cast them out. And then, and you can cast out demons in Jesus' name. So angels are getting inside of people and causing havoc. Or are they talking about spirits of the evil dead? So there seems to be disagreement in Christianity of what a demon is. That's what I'm getting at. It definitely couldn't be an angel, a fallen angel. Why would it piddle around and mess, do little, throw things around in a room? There's not a power there. If a demon really wanted to do damage, it could just destroy an entire city. You know, an angel just evidently had destroyed fucking Sodom and Gomorrah just by wanting to. There may have been two of them. But, these are all stories.
Well, yeah, like I said, I wouldn't, if I was a demon, I wouldn't fuck around with this, like, piddling little bullshit.
Yeah, they can't keep it straight. Are we talking about angels that are fallen angels, or are we talking about spirits of the evil dead? You know, an evil ghost is basically what I believe these demons, if they actually exist as described, they're talking about ghosts of evil people. That's the only thing it could be.
Yeah, that would seem to make more sense. I mean, none of it really makes any sense, but yeah, that would seem
if
to
that's
make
what
more
it
sense.
Is.
From a fictional standpoint.
Because it wouldn't be an angel. It would just say, fuck your city, boom, and blow up the whole city. Because they have the power to.
Yeah.
But they never seem to have any power in these stories. Very rarely are they ever reported to kill anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, which, like I said, seems pretty lame.
Yeah.
Like every now and then, it's like, ooh, they kind of scratched me or like kind of pushed me down the stairs or something.
They never really seem to do any serious damage.
No.
Which leads me to believe if this thing is an outside force, it's just an evil ghost.
Yeah, you'd think it could just like pull your head off.
Yeah, and it doesn't have the power or does not permit it in some way to do these things to you.
So yeah, so they have this whole meeting where they're just like, yeah, you got a demon. And then Melissa asks the $64 question, $64,000 question. Has anybody in the house ever experimented with tarot cards or spirit boards?
Dun, dun, dun.
Uh-oh. So, like, Roseanne tries to be all slick. Well, yeah, but I was a kid.
Yeah, and that was a long time ago.
Shit, son, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's all the excuse
that
we need.
That doesn't matter. Just touching one of those things will just cause a demon to latch on forever. Now,
Scientology says, man, you got a thetan now. You got a body thetan.
That's right. So I'm just like, okay, so you might be thinking, and at least the show addressed this, even though the explanation is pretty lame. Why did the demon only just now start acting up? Because apparently she hadn't touched a spirit board in many years, like since she was a little kid. What?
She said something.
What did you say, Pokey?
She went, brr.
Okay.
Okay.
What are you talking about, back
She's then? Complaining.
Okay, stop complaining, Pokey. Yeah. But yeah, so why did it start acting up now? Wesley's theory is that it's because, the family just now started getting back into being super religious again, and that woke it up. Which, okay, whatever. I don't really know that much about demons, and that's as good an explanation as any, frankly.
They're normally sleeping.
They sleep a lot, those demons. Yeah. They're, like, super lazy. But, so yeah. Now, back when Roseanne was a preteen or teenager, you couldn't really tell how old she was. She looked about 15 or 16 in the reenactment, but from the book that I read, it seemed like she was probably younger. So her and a couple of her friends were doing the spirit board thing. And the spirit they contacted, they did the whole, like, is there anybody in the room? Yes. Will you tell us what your name is? And it said no. But then Roseanne was like, well, if you're really here, then give us a sign. And it apparently, like, yanked her head back by the ponytail. So, you know, I was like, ooh, nice to know that demons are just like mischievous little kindergarten boys pulling on your braid or whatever. So Roseanne said she felt really guilty about playing with a Ouija board decades ago and fucking up her whole entire family. Good job, Mom. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like that. It's just like really funny. Melissa also tells them that the demon wants Brittany, because she's the most innocent and loving of all of them. And, there was some shit about that in the book, and I'll get into that in a little bit, too. So Wesley gives Brittany his little St. Michael's medal and says, I'm going to call up an ordained minister, and they'll come along shortly and, exorcise the house, which seems pretty easy, because I kind of feel like when it's Catholics and shit, they always have, like, problems. You know what I mean? Like, nobody wants to come and do the exorcism or whatever. So in early 2014, the demonologist Joe Eater turns up. He was actually on the show, the real guy. And he was wearing like this baby blue priest shirt, which I don't think I've ever seen one of those. And he had like, he had like 5 o'clock shadow. Like he had some stubble, man. He looked like he'd been on like a few day bender, just like when he was on the show. I'm just kind of saying. So I kind of laughed cause they showed him, he's like, I bring the Bible for this and I bring the candles for that. And I bring the medals for this. And I was like, do you also bring the noise? Do you bring the pain?
You bring the noise. Yeah.
Cause just the way he said he you could tell he was kind of trying to sound badass. And I was just like, and he also brings the noise, but yeah. So we have a lot of fun watching these. So, while they were praying, like doing this whole shit, Chris said they could feel evil. I don't know what that feels like. And heard moaning and groaning and cracks and pops and shit like that. So the priest starts yelling for the demon to show itself, and then Chris starts taunting it, like calling it a coward, saying, what are you, chicken? Like, come out and show us, and blah, blah, blah. And then Chris, like, suddenly doubles to the ground in pain, like the demon just kicked him right in the balls. He actually said it felt like a spear in his side, but I prefer to think that it just, like, kicked him in the balls.
You said you don't know what evil feels like. I know exactly what it feels like. Had you been to that house that... So over there in Boston, me and Eric were in, you'd feel it. Maybe not at first, but after a while, you probably would. It just feels like, for some reason, you're afraid to be in there, and you can't really put your finger on it. And then sometimes it feels like sadness, and then sometimes it just feels like it hates you. It feels like it's being projected onto you. It's weird. It's weird. And you start questioning yourself. It's like, is this my imagination? You go, no, it can't be. And then other people pick up on it. They feel the same way about it. Yeah. It's just it's very oppressive. Almost like it's draining you or something.
Yeah, a lot of people say that. So they're doing this. They keep praying. There's like, you know, they're shaking the camera and making it look like an earthquake and shit like that. But nobody said they saw that. So the priest is basically like, just ignore the demon being an asshole. You know, we're just going to keep on doing this. And then the priest says he kind of like meditates to get the demon's name, which in this case is, what the fuck did he say? Avadu?
I don't know.
I was like, what the
Avadu,
fuck?
Avadu.
Or something.
Avadu.
I don't know. I'm not really sure how to spell it. Like, I looked it up like real quick, but then I was like, what the fuck am I doing? I'm like looking up made up demon names. But yeah, I was just wanted to see if it was a real one or if they just pulled that out their ass. But yeah, so he's like, yeah, that's its name. So once the priest calls the demon by his silly name, it immediately disappears. He's like, well, you can't be here anymore. And it's like, okay, I guess so. And like, he leaves and everything is like back to normal again. I'm like, wow, that was easy.
Tom asked something about Danzig. I can't really read it. I have my glasses on. He goes, what did he say?
Didn't the evil from Danzig's boot transfer into you once you touched it?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. That was a fucking Venus de Milo down at Fenway in Boston. He was up there. I was right front stage, man, right in front of the stage. It was a smaller show, and I had these three Japanese college girls all in them damn 50s looking mini 50s schoolgirl skirts, and we're all being pressed up on the stage like that, and Dad's singing. I fucking grabbed him and it fucking transferred into me. That's how I got so jacked. I got bigger than him. Nah, I'm just kidding.
So yeah, so that was kind of the end of the story. At the end, Brittany said, and this is a direct quote from the show, I could feel madness in the air when it was there, she said. I was like, that really does not sound like something a 10-year-old kid would say. You know what I mean? Just like the way she said it, it sounded very, very strange, like it had been scripted. So that was like the end of that show. But as I said, I actually went through and read this dude's book, or skimmed it at least, like went through there. And I wrote down some interesting things that they probably should have put in the show because, you know, I know they can't mention everything because a lot happens in the book. But, okay, from the book. Now, Chris, the dad, they didn't really go into this that much. But he actually claimed to have been having paranormal experiences from childhood, including being able to see spirits. Like, he said he saw spirits from when he was, as far as he could remember. He said that when he was 6 years old, he actually saw his grandfather's soul leaving his body. Like, when his grandfather died, like, he saw it. Now he said that this ability amplified after his grandmother died, like in 2003, and that he had like deja vu all the time. So they didn't really go into this on the show, that Chris, the dad, like he wasn't a huge character in it. I kind of feel like they focus more on the other people, but yeah, he said he'd been having paranormal shit happen to him his whole life. Now, Roseanne, too, the mom, she supposedly grew up in a haunted house with her grandparents, and her grandparents knew that it was haunted, and they were like, yeah, it's haunted. You know what I mean? She said she heard voices in the house, like, felt like she was being watched all the time. There was also supposedly an incident when she was at school when, like, a door opened by itself, and then, like, she asked it to open and close by itself, and it did. So she started getting, like, really intrigued with the paranormal, hence her doing the thing with the spirit board because she was, like, really interested in it. Like I said, I feel like they didn't go into that all that much. Now, I'll also note that even though the show sort of, kind of, low-key implied that they had just kind of moved into this house, they actually lived in this house in, where the fuck was it? Greenbrier, Arkansas, or wherever? They actually lived there for 9 years before shit really popped off. You know what I mean? Now, the kids had supposedly been seeing shadows and shit around the house from the beginning, but hadn't really thought much about it. Like, they thought it was kind of weird, but it wasn't real overt. But the activity started to ramp up right around the time, like I said, that they started doing the daily devotionals and going to church more often and stuff like that. But they'd actually lived in the house for quite a long time before anything, like, really overt started to happen. They also said that whatever it was that was in the house made them argue about everything. Like, prior to that, they'd been real, like, chill and peaceful and everything like that. So that's another thing that's very commonly reported.
It's a bad house. It's a bad house.
Maybe they seem to think, well, I'll get into this a little bit too. And as I mentioned, they didn't really show any type of poltergeist activity on the show, but they, in the book, they reported a lot of it.
Did?
And they said one of the things that happened all the time was objects disappearing and then reappearing in the same place a few days later.
That's like poltergeist.
That's what I said. Like, they said, yeah, that happened all the time. And also they started hearing, like, weird ass noises at night. They said that Chris's brother, Ryan, he would come over sometimes. I think he was a priest as well. And he thought that there was an evil... he thought the evil presence was coming from, like, their bathroom closet. Like, the closet in the bathroom of, like, the couple. Hmm. You know what I mean? So, I don't know why they didn't really mention that. They did, like, some stuff with, the kids' bathroom and stuff. But he said that's kind of where the ground zero of it was.
I've seen them both. I've seen Poltergeist. I've seen Bad House. I'd have to be there. In this case, to see if it was one or the other. Maybe just because something vanished and reappeared, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's poltergeist. Maybe a bad house could be so bad that it could have that poltergeist-like effect. Make an object vanish somewhere and then reappear. And it may not be a poltergeist there. It might just be a bad place. Some kind of weird psychic energy fucking with the dimensions or something. You know, how do you explain any of this? We don't have a science, you know. It's some kind of an exotic physics. Stuart Amaroff would say it would have something to do with quantum physics, quantum consciousness. Maybe a location can have a consciousness to a certain extent, which would be kind of like the hotel out of the damn Overlook, where it had a consciousness of its own, and ghosts, maybe. You know, because if humans have consciousness, and I'm thinking that animals have consciousness, who are we to say that inanimate objects might have a certain kind of consciousness under certain circumstances? It's just not one that we really can, you know, I don't know. I mean, that sounds hokey, but I don't know. Maybe a place can have a consciousness or a thing, an inanimate object, or I don't know. I don't know. I'm just kind of grasping at that. I don't know. Maybe a place could have something kind of like a consciousness. That's all I'm thinking.
Zach says, I get deja vu randomly sometimes, and it's the weirdest thing, especially with situations I know I've never been in before. And then he said, I just looked it up, and apparently deja vu can be a pre-seaside symptom. I'm not really sure. I'm sure it, like, auto-corrected to something else. Yeah. And also a sign of certain mental disorders. Yeah, I've had it happen a few times, but not that many times. But yeah, so Chris's brother, who I'm assuming is a priest, he came, like, his name's Ryan, and he came and did a blessing at their house, which they didn't show on the episode. And that made the activity, like, ramp up even more. So now everybody is seeing these weird shadows. They call it, like, dancing shadows around the house. They would see them all the time, not just the kids. Like, the kids saw them from the first thing, but they didn't think it was that weird. You know what I mean? They just kind of got used to it. But after the blessing, then everybody started seeing them. And then, like I said, they started getting a great deal of poltergeist activity. Like, you got dog toys, like, flying through the air. There was, like, a big wooden barrel on the porch that moved by itself. Bathroom faucets turning on by themselves. Shit like that.
Yeah, it all sounds like poltergeist.
Like I said, they didn't do any of that in the episode. I don't know why. That would have been a lot more exciting. Also, they all started... I'm assuming that they meant that they started getting, like, really... feeling really drained. Because they said we would all sit down on the sofa, like, in the evening to, like, watch our shows and stuff. And then they'd all just start falling asleep. And then, like, a lot of times they said they would be jolted awake between 3 and 3:30 in the morning, seemingly for no reason. Like, the kids started thinking their parents were coming in their room and waking them up, but their parents said, no, we never came in your room. But they just thought somebody was in there, and it kept, like, waking them up. And they said the parents had that, too. Justin started having nightmares about a dark figure wearing boots and carrying a staff. I think it also had, like, a hooded, like, a cloak or some shit like that. He also reported hearing boots stomping in the house, and the parents apparently heard this too. Like, it was really, really loud. Like, somebody was stomping around in boots. They didn't show that on the episode either. This was pretty weird. Chris said that one day, I thought this was actually going to amount to something, but I don't think it did. Chris said that one day when he was at work, like, an elderly couple approached him and said that he looked troubled, and they told him that they were prayer warriors. And they gave him their phone number in case he needed help. I don't know if he called them later, because I was reading that section. I'm like, are you going to tell me that, like, two old people, like, walked up to him at work and they turned out to be ghosts or something? But I guess they were. But yeah, they weren't ghosts. They were real, apparently.
Larry writes that maybe what it is just, like, leftover energies in these areas from other people. Well, that would be a ghost. Maybe. But yeah, we have to accept something that's, like, newer understandings of the mind and the brain and consciousness, how it works. When you think of yourself and your consciousness and your soul, you think that that's what you are, your consciousness. But actually, no. Your conscious waking self is just one of the processes that your mind and your brain is doing. That's kind of like the screen on a laptop. It's not the laptop. Most of you is in the unconscious and the subconscious. That's where most of you is. And it's doing some fucking mysterious shit. And it's in charge of your consciousness. Things that you think are your idea that you consciously come up with, now your subconscious solved that and worked that out a long time ago and gave you that idea. And there's more than one of them in there. There's a multiplicity of these different, it's like a committee inside your mind discussing things over and then handing the results down to you. It's freaky when you think about it. So what kind of energy, what kind of soul is this where most of it is unconscious? Can something like that exist in an area? Can a place have something like that? Can an inanimate object have an unconscious? I don't know. Weird when you think about it.
Okay, let's see. Where was I? Oh, yeah, the prayer warriors. Okay. So not long after this, the family takes a short vacation to Branson, Missouri. Now, when they go there, they wanted to do a ghost tour thing. I guess they'd wanted to do it before, but Brittany had been too young and she'd been scared to do it. You'd think that since they were, like, plagued by hauntings, they wouldn't want to do a ghost tour, but whatever. They were, like, really into paranormal shit, I guess. Now, it was on this particular ghost tour that they met Wesley Fox. That's how they met. Like, they didn't, say that in the show, because he was the guide on the ghost tour that night. So Wesley and his wife Melissa, the paranormal people, they come to the house to investigate, just like in the episode. Now, Melissa apparently got a photo that looked like it had four faces in it, like, because they were taking pictures and doing shit. Also, they got an EVP of an older woman's voice saying pray, which they were saying was assuming was the grandma, and also one that kind of sounded like a growl. Here's something that I kind of wish they put in the episode, because this is, like, pretty creepy. I don't know why this is creepy, but Chris told Wesley that the clock in Brittany's room always stopped at 3:45, even when they put new batteries in it. And Wesley told them, oh, that's demonic. I don't know why. Like, he didn't really elaborate.
3:45, isn't that when the people got killed in the Amityville Horror?
No, that was 3:15.
3:15, okay.
That's because that's the first thing I thought of, too.
Right.
Like, yeah, 3:15. That's why he kept waking up at 3:15, because they kept hearing, like, the gunshots and stuff.
Okay.
But, yeah. Now, Melissa said that she saw a mist in the house with a face coming out of it. I think this was right around the time when she walked out into all the fake spider webs. And remember, they showed her, like, showing the demon. She didn't say the demon looked like a demon. She said that she saw a black mist and that there was a face coming out of it, and that the face had a snout kind of like a dog or a wolf, but shorter, and it had glowing red eyes. And then Wesley says, you mean like a gargoyle? And she said, yeah, it looked like a gargoyle, like a gargoyle face, like coming out of the thing. So at this point, Wesley tells the family, he's like, yeah, look, you guys have to go everywhere in pairs, like all sleep in the living room together, like, you know, just, you have to go on the buddy system, because obviously this is like a bad, this is a bad shit. Now, Joe, the demonologist, he actually sends the family a blessing kit, like, through the mail, which I was like, wow, can you do that? Okay. So they can do the thing, like, at the house themselves. Like, they bury property metals around the perimeter of the yard and so forth. Now, this actually, like, this was before the demonologist even got there, I think. Like, he just sent them all the shit, and they did it themselves. And this actually seemed to work for a while, for, like, several weeks. But then, not long after Thanksgiving, like, shit started up again. Now, a few days before Christmas, Chris woke up at 3:15, so maybe it was like an Amityville Horror thing, and heard like a huge crash coming from the kitchen. So he goes out to check, but he couldn't find anything that could have made the noise. But then when he went back to bed, he heard the growling again, but like in his room. And then the next morning, Brittany said she had heard the crashing sounds too, but she was like too scared to go see what it was. Now, this was what I was talking about the ambiguity about, like, nightmares and reality. Because there's this kind of thing where it's like, okay, Brittany was like, she had a nightmare, but then he was talking about it, like, in the next few paragraphs as though it really happened. Because she's like, she woke up on Christmas Day and then opened her presents, and then Brittany went in her room and she got like a new little journal or a new little diary or something. So she's in there like writing in it in her bedroom, and then she looks up and she sees the face of a teenage boy in her mirror, and like his clothes are all torn up and his face is burned, and he asks her why she's there, and then she's like, because this is my house, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And then he says, it's all your fault, you burned down our house. Like, and I don't know if this ever amounted to anything, because, like, the house didn't burn down, obviously, but it's just, like, I don't know, that was, like, really weird. So then a few days later, she's kind of forgotten about that, but then she's in her room again, writing in her journal again, and then she looks in her mirror again and sees a little girl in there this time, who's wearing kind of, like, a little flowery, like, sack dress or something like that, and, like, laughing evilly at her. And then a few days after that, she sees yet another person in the mirror, which is another teenage boy, but a different one. Like, he's blonde, whereas the first one had dark hair. And that she said this one also had burns on his face, but not as bad as the first kid that she saw. And all of these kids, like, keep saying, it's your fault you burned our house down. Like, she kept having... So I don't know if she really saw that, or if she just kept having, like, recurring nightmares about that. It wasn't real clear. So she apparently sees these people in her mirror, like, every time she tries to write in the diary. And then she tells her family about this, but they just tell her she's special. And then she kind of, like, brings the mirror out, like, can you see anybody in it or something? But I don't know if this was part of the dream. Like I said, just the way it was written was kind of ambiguous. Now, later on, Chris and Roseanne have been out shopping, and they come home and they find that every single light in the house is on. And then when they went inside, all the kitchen cabinets were open. And there was also, like, a dark figure standing by the Christmas tree, who they described as being about 7 feet tall. And then it kind of came, like, storming at Chris. And it sounded like the way it was written was, like, it shrunk down and then kind of went into him and then out again, sort of. So they call the Foxes again, like, Wesley and Melissa the next day, but it would be a while before they could get down there because there was, like, a big snowstorm and, like, all the roads were closed and shit. Now, before the investigators come out, the family had some of the kids' cousins over, I think it was. It was a bunch of other kids over. And they were playing card games at the table one night. And then all the cards started, like, levitating. And then later that same night, a carton of milk, or, like, a jug of milk, like, flew out of Chris's hand when he was getting it, like, to make dinner. He said he felt his hand burning, and then, like, someone just, like, smacked it out of his hand. And then they heard the growling again also. Sometime after that, Chris woke up with, like, a horrible pain in his stomach, and also lost his keys again, which is like his keys where he always left them, like they weren't there, and then like they were gone for a bunch of days. So, you know, and then they kind of turned back up again. He said that happened all the time.
So it's starting to go into poltergeist phenomenon.
Right.
Man, I wonder why this wasn't in the episode.
That's what I was wondering, because I was like, wow, all kind of crazy shit happened in this fucking house. Like shit disappearing and
changed,
flying around.
Unless they changed the story.
Maybe. I don't know.
That they saw the episode and they go, yeah. And then they go, well, we can make it better than that. And they write the book. I don't know.
Yeah, like, it's weird. We need to add some shit.
Because you would think that the haunting, that they would have eaten that up and had a good
right, because like I said, that's very cinematic.
Yeah.
And yeah, like later this same day, like that he lost his keys with the horrible pain and everything, he also said that he came home and was putting some stuff in their freezer, like out in the, you know, they had one of those freezers like out in the garage. And like some and like something like pushed him like against the freezer, and then both him and Roseanne then said they saw a rocking chair that was in the garage like rocking back and forth by itself, and then they went inside and tried to light one of the blessed candles that, you know, demonologist Joe had sent, but it wouldn't light, and then they heard like a disembodied laugh. But then Brittany came in and got it to light, saying, oh, you just have to have faith, and she was the one that lit it, they said.
The smell of sanctity.
Yeah, there we go again with that. And then later...
Man, we gotta get that as a fucking clip.
We really do. I gotta find that somewhere. Okay. And then later on, Chris said he was putting... They've been playing a board game, and he went to put it away, and it got knocked out of his hands. And then when he was in the hallway, he saw this 7-foot dark figure again with, like, red eyes. And he said it made a booming sound, like footsteps, and, like, he just kept having, like, really, really bad, like, abdominal pain all the time. Now, the family actually met up with the Foxes at, like, a McDonald's, like, at some point later. And Chris says he sees the figure in the McDonald's, that, like, it followed them there. And he says he sees it over in the corner, and then suddenly it would be, like, right next to him again. And he's like, and it's touching his arm. And then apparently while everybody is watching, like, 3 red marks go down his arm, like, after he says that it's standing there. So he goes in the bathroom with Wesley's son, Brandon, and they hear footsteps even though nobody is in the bathroom but them. So this was like at a McDonald's. So around this time, the Cupids have actually been staying at a motel. Now, while they're out front talking to the Foxes, a trash can behind them starts rocking back and forth like violently. And then a bottle of Coke like also flies into the air on its own when Chris reaches for it.
And it all sounds typical poltergeist.
Like I said, that's what I was saying. It's like, I don't know why this stuff wasn't in the episode. Also, they see the hooded figure with the staff that Justin kept seeing. They saw that in the motel room. Plus, they hear the evil laughter and the growling. The door rattles by itself. They go back to the house to do, like, another kind of investigation/blessing type thing. And then they had a motion detector set up in the bathroom, but it keeps going off, even though ostensibly nobody is in there.
I will say this, is that if it's a poltergeist case, it's very rare that an apparition is reported in a poltergeist case, like a humanoid-looking one. Usually it's just, you know, objects moving.
Yeah.
So who knows? Who knows about this case? Are they mixing things? Did they improve the story? Who knows?
Yeah. But see, that's the thing. So this motion detector keeps going off. Now, nobody saw anything except Melissa, who was apparently like the psychic, right?
Yeah.
She said, and this is how she described it. She said she sees a short black figure that looked like a tall spider, except it had 6 legs instead of 8, with a humanoid face and jagged teeth.
Boy, that's...
Which, that's pretty out there.
Yeah.
And plus, remember on the show, she said she was terrified of spiders.
The only things during my poltergeist fucking episode went for two weeks. The only things that we saw was like a blue haze that you knew it was there, but you really couldn't look directly at it, which I described that in other places. Another thing that we'd see is like it looked like something was you could feel something watching you, and you'd look up in the corner of the room. And you could kind of see a round, clear ball there, but not when you were looking directly at it. You can only see it kind of if you looked beside it. And me and Red would be doing that. He goes, is that there? We're like, yeah, I think that's there. And, you know, it's about that big, right? And he goes, yeah. And I go, it's gone. He goes, yeah, it's not there anymore. You know, just be shit like that. Nothing ever humanoid. Just like disturbances, you know what I mean? Like a visual, like an optical disturbance of some sort. And the blue haze looked like some kind of optical disturbance. It didn't look like blue cigarette smoke wafting through in clouds. It just looked like a sheet of even blue cigarette smoke. But you when you got up close to it, it would just vanish like a mirage. You know, it was just some kind of optical distortion of some sort. Weird. It was real weird. And it didn't give off any light or anything. But we played around with that for as long as we saw it. And then we stopped seeing it after a while. It's weird. But this thing about humanoid type, you know, fucking apparitions and spider apparitions and shit like that, very rarely reported in any credible poltergeist case that had a lot of witnesses and outside witnesses and cops and newspaper reporters come to see it, and they could see things moving, but they would never really see any figures or anything, you know.
Well, I kind of feel like a lot of times when a psychic gets into the mix, like on this show, they'll say, oh, they saw this and that and the other thing. And I'm like, yeah, but you didn't really see it like in front of your face, like so other people could see it. They just see it in their mind.
Yeah.
Like they just see a vision of it. Which, like I said, I can see lots of things in my mind.
Yeah.
But nobody else can see that shit.
No. It's got to be objective.
Yeah.
More than one person has to see it. All right. And you also kind of want some people that are not, what should I say, fucking in the direct family circle. Like as soon as like neighbors, like when we went to Oceanside and it happened at Oceanside too, you know, it was all in the same episode. And Lois's friends saw it happen and Red's friends saw it happen. And I was like, we all felt a lot better that it wasn't just us seeing it, that other people could see it. You know, because you knew you weren't crazy then. We knew we weren't crazy. It's just that we thought it wouldn't perform for anybody outside the circle. And it'd make us look crazy that, it, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to do it when they're around. Now they think you're crazy. And then when they leave, it does it, you know? No, it would perform a little bit.
Like the singing frog people in that cartoon.
Yeah.
Every time he tried to get it to perform for other people, it would just sit there and rib it.
We were paranoid that, you know, we didn't know anybody at Math Mountain to help us or anything. You know, it was before the internet. Didn't know anybody in the area. So we just kind of kept it under wraps until we got back home, you know, which is Oceanside area at that time for Lois and Red. And, no, they saw it too, because it didn't have to be at Mammoth Mountain. It was wherever we were. Yeah. It followed us, if that's the way. It was because we were creating it. It was RSPK, Recurrent Spontaneous Psychokinesis. It was a group synergy. Me as the main catalyst, because it happens here every now and then. Jenny's seen it, but just not as strong as it was. Some of our friends have seen it, throwing remotes and shit. But, you know, it takes months to ramp up to get that to go. It's not something you can do on command either. It's spontaneous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the motion detector, they try to fix it, but it just kept going off. I will note, like I said, that Melissa was the only one who could supposedly see the weird spider what's-this that was in the bathroom setting it off, but, you know, they couldn't get it to, like, stop going off. So they also did, like, a bunch of EVP sessions and stuff, and Chris would basically tell them where he could feel the evil presence, and they would take pictures. Like, he's like, oh, it's standing right here, it's standing right there, or something like that, which is kind of like that other poltergeist case that we talked about. Now, the photos, I haven't seen them. They didn't put them in the book, I don't think. But the photos are basically just, like, a bunch of orbs, which, you know, whatever. And one supposedly showed something, like a shadowy something or other, like standing next to Chris. And they said that supposedly not too long after this picture was taken, he was actually pushed violently against a wall. Wesley Fox, the investigator, said he also got scratched by the demon during this investigation. There was also, I thought this was pretty weird, but they said they turned around and there was like a water bottle that one of them had been drinking out of that was like half full or something. And they said they turned around and it was turned over and like balanced on its top. Like on the counter or whatever.
That's a poltergeist type shit.
Which, like I said, that's poltergeist type shit. Like,
stacking things up, putting things in patterns.
That'd be freaky. So, so the demon supposedly, like, stepped up its attacks prior to the final blessing that they did. Chris got violently ill again. They heard, like, the evil laughter, the growling, cabinet doors all being open all the time. This was pretty weird. A large skeletal handprint, which appeared on the seat of a stool. Like, Justin was going to sit down on it, and there's, like, a big skeleton hand on it.
No, a print of a hand.
Yeah, like a print of a hand.
It was like it was pressing down?
Right, I mean, that was the impression I got from the way it was described.
Yeah.
You know, shit being thrown around by itself, stuff like that. In the shower incident from the program, like where Emo Justin was in the shower and like, you know, well, you know, with the hair. Hopefully he doesn't still have that hairstyle. No. But I'm sure
he does. Yeah.
I'm sure he doesn't. In that incident in the book, they said he actually heard someone saying his name and saying his nickname, which is JC, which they actually didn't show in the episode, which maybe he said at first, like it kind of sounded like his dad's voice, but not. You know what I mean? So they didn't really get into that. They also didn't get into, shortly after this, the same thing happened to Brittany, because they were like, well, why don't you wait to take a shower for a little while? So then when Brittany went in there to take a shower, she had the same thing happen. Like, she had, like, a burning sensation, like, on her back. And then there were, like, at least 9 scratches on her back of her shoulder. And Chris said that the scratches looked like they were trying to spell something. And they said the word that it looked like it was trying to spell was wife. Which, ew. I mean, the demon was, like, claiming her. Mm-hmm. She's 10. I'm like, gross, demon. Pedo demon. But, yeah. So, I mean, they didn't put that in the show for obvious reasons. But, yeah, about that point, like I said, it was just, like, growling laughter, yada yada. And then they did, like, the big final, you know, exorcism just, like, in the episode. And apparently everything was fine after that because Joe came and fixed everything. And they got a Vadu or... of whatever the fuck that demon's name was.
Yeah.
Is that a real... Well, they're not real. None of them are real demons, but I never heard of a demon named that, so...
Yeah, all those stuff like, you know, what do you call it? Like, what was the name of that damn? Beelzebub and all these names of these demons that all came out of, like, Renaissance period. And it's because rich dudes would hire guys to write books about demons. And they're like, oh, yeah, we write books about demons. Yeah, sure. It's fucking funny when you think about it. So you start writing fanfic. And then it becomes part of, like,
everybody's
religion.
Like, ooh, they must have known
this is a source book.
Shit. Right.
This is a real source book, man. You can hunt
where it was just somebody, it. Like, smoking weed at home going, ooh, that sounds good.
books were expensive. Only rich people could afford them. So there was a huge industry in writing books for rich dudes. And you could go to some rich dude and go, dude, I got this information, man. Check this out. Look at this book. It's all about demons. Really? Where were the sources? You're asking too much. Church. All right. We know all about this shit. You know, fucking, and then, you know.
Can't tell you if I told you.
Give me 40 crowns for this shit.
If I told you, I'd have to kill you.
Yeah, give me 40 crowns for this. Oh, man, you know.
Everybody likes to think they have, like, secret knowledge.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? That's very,
very attractive
to people.
Doing the pages and the beautiful illustrations of damn... fly demons and fucking shit. You know, of course they're going to buy that. They're going to put that in their library. That was the laptop of the fucking olden days.
I mean, I'd probably buy it too if I had money. Not because I really believed it was real, but just because I thought it was cool.
They were works of art, man. The covers were all wood, fucking encrusted with jewels and leather and painted and fucking gold thread. And yeah. They were styling, man. Really styling. Beautiful books.
Yeah.
We did a whole show on Ivan the Terrible, or Ivan the... I call him Ivan the Great, all right? Ivan the Great's lost library that may be underneath the Kremlin somewhere. I'd like to... And they even had a list of all the books that he had in there, and a lot of them were books that don't exist or don't exist anymore. Some of them were never heard of. And classics, you know. And shit from the Greek era, some of it. Greco-Roman books. But nobody's really sure if that library ever really existed. They looked for it.
I mean, there's
no
telling. It's like, you know, it's so much time has passed. It's like somebody might have mentioned it somewhere, and then somebody might have mentioned that mention, and it's like, you know.
It's a bunch of underground tunnels underneath the Kremlin that go back 1,000 years. And it floods periodically. Most of it's been closed off even for fucking hundreds of years. And flooding happens in there. I think because we did research on that show on it, and I came to the conclusion in my mind that if that was ever there, it got flooded and all those books are destroyed, most likely.
Likely, yeah.
Water table got to it over time, probably. It's probably sealed away, you know, door covered up so you wouldn't find it, you know. I don't know why he would take all those books and hide them, though. It's unlikely. More likely he sold them.
Yeah, you would think. Yeah. I mean, why would you just stash them down there? It seems
right.
Like dumb.
I'm going to stash them here in a secret vault and nobody will ever find it. Well, what good are they going to do you?
Yeah.
You know, you'll be dead, you know, in a few decades. So why are you doing this?
Yeah.
More likely he sold them.
I would think.
Yeah.
All right. So, are you ready to wrap up? What do you think about the story? Well, like I said, I kind of feel like I wish they had put more stuff from the book into the episode, because the episode was a little bit boring.
Yeah.
I mean, a little bit boring, a little bit repetitive.
I'm going to tell you what I think about this. I wasn't there. Okay, so I would never be sure unless I was there. I have a feeling, just based on everything that Jenny's dug up, that if this actually happened, if it's not a hoax, what it was is a bad house. All right. And then they decided for many different reasons. Usually it's a religious reason. You're trying to make money and get church, you know, get church followers and stuff like that, or to get street cred within the churches. Then you embellish the story a little bit, and it looks like it has got embellished with some poltergeist type phenomenon. I don't know if a bad house, I've seen them both, I don't know if a bad house can be so bad that it moves objects. Steve Mara might know. He'd probably say, yeah, there's some reports of it, but you can't confirm them, you know. A lot of this shit can't be confirmed. You got to be there at the time, and then the phenomenon doesn't last very long, and then it's gone. You know, if this was happening over a period of time, and all this massive phenomenon is very impressive, why weren't other people called in on it? Why didn't they go to the news? Why didn't they go to the police? Because in the Enfield poltergeist, they went to the police. The police were friendly. It was England, you know what I mean? The police were friendly enough to come and, you know, calling their police, you know, they're not armed fucking goons and shit, you know, or they're just kind of like bouncers, you know. They may not have a whole lot to do.
They're just like, ooh, this sounds...
Oh, yeah, let's go check it out. You know what I mean? If you called American cops and said, come over here, we got a ghost, they'd hang up on you. Megan, we got shit to do. They would never even respond to that.
No, of course they wouldn't.
And then instead of the police showing up, it'd be fucking mental health showing up. They'd arrest you and fucking send you to a damn mental hospital.
They probably would.
And they'd take the kids. You'd lose them. All right. So we were scared to say anything about it. I think it was, if it was real, it was a bad house, and they kind of blew it out of proportion to help sales and notoriety.
And I think we talked about this a little bit before, but there wasn't as much of that of this in this episode. But I'm always kind of clued in with the whole, oh, you used a Ouija board as a child, and so a demon latched onto you, and that's what you get. So I always kind of get that sort of like satanic, panicky kind of Christian victimhood kind of narrative. And I feel like there's a lot of the later shows went in that direction.
Yeah.
Because there's definite tropes of that.
The core of the story in the episode is the house is bad. Being watched, bad feelings, bad dreams. We see things in our dreams. The church came and got rid of it. That's the basic story.
Yeah.
That's a bad house. It's a bad house. That's not a demon. That's not a poltergeist. That's not RSPK or anything. It's just, I don't know what a bad house is, but I've seen them. It's just a bad place. It's a place that's strong with the dark side. You know, like in Return of the Jedi or fucking, no, what was it? Not Return of the Jedi. What was that? Fucking Empire Strikes Back, where Yoda fucking goes going to the tree over there. Fucking, you know, what's in there? Places, you know, nothing that you don't take in there when you sell. You know, he sees Vader in there, seeing visions. You know, it was a bad place. That's why Yoda was hiding there, to offset his good aura. He had to be next to something that was bad, so you couldn't feel him in the Force, so the Emperor couldn't find him. That's a good fucking thinking.
I don't want to be feeling Yoda.
Yeah, couldn't be feeling him through the Force. So he had to camouflage his presence by being in a haunted area or a cursed area.
Which is kind of a cool idea.
Yeah.
Actually. That's a cool concept.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a Sith temple, a ruined Sith temple where a bunch of bad shit happened.
Yeah. You know? It's Vader time.
He's probably human sacrifice and training and sorcery and shit. Trying to figure out the fucking secrets of life and death so you can live forever and bring things back from the dead. And how do you do that? You kill a bunch of shit and try to bring it back. So what do you, I guess you start with mice and then you end up with people. Kill that person and see if I can bring it back. That's some evil shit when you think about
They're
it.
Like, oh, well, throw them on the
fire. That didn't work. Go ahead, we'll try another one. You try this time. You know, and they must, that's probably what they're describing in some of these stories.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I guess we're going to wrap it up. We've been going an hour and a half, which is longer, twice as long as the actual episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, like I said, I did actually have the book for this one, too. So that was kind of interesting. And there was so much stuff they left out.
I'll make you something to eat.
Oh, that sounds delightful. Mm-hmm. All right, so be sure to drop by again tomorrow. We're doing another movie review, and it's going to be The Greasy Strangler from 2016, yeah. Which I've actually been wanting to see for a while, and a couple of people have recommended it, so we're going to watch that tonight, and we will be talking about that tomorrow. So thank you, everybody, for dropping by, and we'll see you guys again tomorrow. Bye.